is, what is the coverage of chlamydia testing in 15 to 25-year-old women in the USA, a multi-parameter evidence synthesis?
Okay, thank you very much. And I should say what I'm presenting here is based on joint work with several people listed here. Sorry. I'm grateful for the contribution of these people, of course, and their insights and guidance for this work. So let's start with some background. Chlamydia screening, as all of you know, is recommended in the US for all sexually active women below 26. And despite this recommendation being out there since about 20 years now, testing coverage is still relatively unknown. We don't really know how much this testing coverage is. What I mean by that is the proportion of the women in that target group tested in a given year. Of course, testing is not exactly the same thing as screening. In practice, however, screening of asymptomatic women is often not really distinguished from testing, which includes screening, but also testing for other reasons like partner notification or symptoms. When you go to the literature, you do find estimates of testing coverage. I just compiled or collected a few here. The list is not complete. For example, in 2010, there was a publication by Heine et al. They came out with an estimate of 21%. There's another paper from 2013 by Broad et al. Where they compiled several estimates using different methods, and their estimates varied from 34 to 69%. So you see these coverage estimates vary really a lot. They depend on the data sources that were used, on the estimation methods, etc. It gets even more complicated when you look at indirect data. On the previous slide, we used direct data. Now, on this one here, you could say for testing coverage, you could also use indirect information to estimate that. For example, the surveillance cases, how many cases are there? So when you look at the year 2008, for example, in the age group we're interested in, we see that a bit more than 3,000 cases per 100,000 have been reported. Let's quickly combine that with population prevalence, which is around 4%, say, in women. So let's do a quick back of the envelope calculation. 4% prevalence, that means 4,000 cases per 100,000. If you have a reported number of more than 3,000 cases per 100,000, that would mean that testing coverage must be high. We diagnose more than 75% of the cases, right? But if this coverage is so high, shouldn't we see a larger impact on prevalence? That was the starting point for our work. We have on one hand what we've seen on the previous slide, direct estimates, which suggest either a low coverage or it's relatively unclear, the uncertainty is big. And we have the indirect estimates, which would rather suggest a large coverage. So are these data consistent? Now, this is a very simplistic calculation. It's just the back of the envelope. So we were wondering if we used a little bit a more sophisticated approach, could we reconcile these data sources? And this approach we used is called multi-parameter evidence synthesis, and I'll try to give you a flavor of what it is on this one slide here. So essentially, it is a method to combine different data sources, different data types, right? Often you have data which informs a combination of parameters. So as an illustration, let's take this equation here, which is well known in infectious disease epidemiology. Prevalence equals incidence times duration. So these are three parameters you might be interested in, and you could do a study to estimate each of them. So you could do one to estimate prevalence, one for incidence, and one for duration. You could analyze these studies separately, and you would end up with three separate estimates, one for each parameter. But these three separate estimates would not necessarily be consistent, right? They would not be consistent in the sense that they would fulfill this relationship here. So when you do multi-parameter evidence synthesis, what you do, you combine, you do a joint analysis, and you take such known relationships into account in your model. You build them into your model. And that leads to then a coherent underlying model for all data sources. So in that case, you would have two so-called basic parameters, which are really the parameters of the model, and then there are other parameters of interest, which become functions of our basic parameters. We do that in a Bayesian statistical framework. It makes life much simpler if you're a Bayesian for that. You do not, strictly speaking, need to do that way. I'll not go into more detail about the Bayesian stuff here in the interest of time. If you're interested, just come to me after the talk. I'm more than happy to give you more detail on that. An overview of the data we used. We had these direct sources on testing coverage. We've seen that before. We had these indirect sources, and we had a third group of data. These are other factors we, as we did the modeling, realized we need to build in. So data on reason for testing, but also data on chlamydia positivity in screening participants, that was were data from the UK, and also some data on testing coverage by insurance type, because one data source, this market scan database here, covers only women with private insurance. That causes or creates some bias, and we needed to build that into the model to correct for that. Okay, the analysis model. I try to explain a little bit the model structure on one slide here without going into mathematical details. And that is a challenge. I'm a statistician, so it's going to be challenging to explain the model with a cartoon. I'll give a try here. The idea is that you split the population into mutually exclusive subgroups, which means you go down a decision tree, and then your basic parameters are these subgroup proportions. So you start, for example, with the question, is the person sexually active, yes or no? Does the person have chlamydia, yes or no? Has the person been tested, yes or no? And you can go further. So what was the reason for testing? Was the test positive? And these subsets here are, or the proportions of women within these subsets are then our basic parameters, so to speak, and we can combine them to get our estimate of testing coverage, which is simply the probability of testing given that you're in A. So the probability that you're in the green area given that you're within A. And one thing I wanted to mention here is that testing coverage now can be differential. It can be it depends on whether you're chlamydia positive or negative. That was a finding of the model, and that is allowed for in the model here, because we combine this thing with all these small subsets, the small sub pieces here. A few words in terms of model fit. The final model has 26 parameters, so the models become relatively big. We fit that to 30 data points. That is not untypical for a multi-parameter evidence synthesis. The model fits really well. I cannot show you all 26 parameters, or all 30 data points, rather, but just a subset here, and you see the crosses, that's the observed data, the dots and the bars give the point estimates and 95% credible intervals, and they fit really well. But the nice thing is that that's a set of proportions here, so prevalence, testing coverage, etc., but we also match now the surveillance data with that model. So the surveillance counts, the observed ones, with our model estimates, we match these. So the model is able to reconcile the different data sources we included. So in terms of testing coverage, what were the results here? First, some words on the final model we used. The final model had three key components that were really important to achieve this fit. Without these, we didn't get the same performance. One was this differential testing coverage according to the unknown underlying chlamydia status. So testing is more likely in chlamydia-positive women compared to chlamydia-negative women, despite the women not knowing their status. And there was evidence for that. Then we have reasons for testing in our model, and we have a bias adjustment to adjust for the data sources which were based on only women with private insurance. The overall fit was very good, and the coverage estimate we come up with in that model is around 30%. This adjustment for testing coverage according to chlamydia status seemed to be important in particular for the teenagers, a little bit less for the other age group. And the adjustment for testing coverage according to, or this bias adjustment according to insurance type seemed to be important for both groups. So the model was stratified according to these two age groups. I didn't say that before. We fitted also some alternative models. One was a model where we did not include this bias adjustment, and then the fit was not good. The coverage estimates are essentially those which you get out directly of the market scan data without adjusting for the insurance type thing. But here the fit overall was not good. The number of cases we would explain with that model was simply too low. Here we could not account for all the cases reported in surveillance. Finally, another model we fitted was a model where we dropped reason for testing. Here the fit was quite good as well. So purely from a statistical point of view, we would not be able to clearly separate and select one of these models. The estimates, when you look at them, you may wonder about their plausibility, but this is, in that sense, an approach which is more hypothesis generating, right? The models are quite complex, so you will find different models that may fit your data equally well. And then you need to go further to see which what makes more sense and do more work to confirm one of these. So in conclusion, multi-parameter evidence synthesis can show that chlamydia testing coverage of around 30% is consistent with the observed numbers of cases. To achieve the good fit, however, it was key to include two factors, namely the fact that chlamydia, or the fact we do have evidence that chlamydia testing is or coverage is higher in chlamydia positive compared to chlamydia negative women, and also that privately insured are less likely to get tested than publicly insured women. Of course, testing coverage does depend on many other factors. So we had here, in the end, still a very simple model. The objective was to see what do we need as a minimal set, so to speak, to reconcile the data, and that's what we found here. I do not claim that this is the coverage, the testing coverage. We need to go into more details to get a better understanding of what's really going on, but this can show that the data with 30% coverage, we can reconcile the different data sources. Obviously, the results are sensitive to the data sources used, to the models used, so we need to refine the model to get a better understanding. But in the end, this better understanding of chlamydia testing coverage will help us to interpret trends in prevalence better, and there in the end also to assess the impact of the screening programs better. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you so much for that really interesting talk. We have some time for questions, and there's a microphone in this middle aisle here. Are there any questions? Okay. Yeah. Can you please go to the microphone? That would be great. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Tamika Matthews from the Philadelphia Department of Public Health. I'm not sure if you went over it, but my question was, privately insured less likely to get tested than publicly insured. Do you know why that is?
Maybe other people do know. I'm, as the statistician, do not. I know. Maybe someone else can. I mean, I know how to include that into the model. There's evidence for it in the literature. You do find that. Now, we have experts here, you can explain.
Well, obviously I'm not from the US, and there are plenty of people who know this far better than I. It's just a really, really consistent finding that Medicaid-insured women are much more likely to get tested than women in private insurance.
So there's no reason why. There's no evidence stating why you're saying, like, why is that? And how can you, like, help people or so they can get tested? Like, what can you do to increase the privately insured testing?
I think that's probably another session that is going on at the moment.
All right, thank you. Dr. Gutsteiger, thank you so much for that. That just fascinating use of this modeling technique in order to better understand a very intractable problem that we have. We have very sort of piecemeal, pictures of what's going on in various sentinel populations, and so I think we're all reaching for a population level estimate. And so my question to you is that you've taken essentially static estimates, from these various sources to create your models. And so my question is it possible to build a more dynamic picture so that you can actually see what might be going on, that would suggest potentially an impact on prevalence? Because as we know, we've been seeing this increase, in screening and a variety of other parameters that are getting women into testing, and that's changing constantly, and there's lots of different influences from a program intervention standpoint to get women into testing and so forth. So I was wondering if you have any thoughts about how you would incorporate trends in all the different 26 parameters, so as to come up with an estimate?
Yeah, it's a very good question. It obviously, this is part of the objectives to do something like that. It just gets much more complex in the sense that if you have one snapshot, now you have these 26 parameters. When you start to building several layers in terms of time, when you start to bring time in, you need to think carefully about the relationships of these parameters across time. So you need to start thinking how you link the different parameters. But you can definitely, you can do that, and this is the objective. We must now continue and collect data for or combine all the data over at least 10 years to then have a consistent model which is able to model time trends. You can do that, it's just you need to start building into the model assumptions like, do you think that some trends are monotonously increasing, or don't you relate them at all, or how do you relate the parameters over time? So what are the assumptions you make relative to that? Which trends do you think do make sense or not? If you don't make any assumption, the number of parameters will just explode, and it will not explain a lot, probably, because you're not using all the information you have. You will know some trends are on the upsweep, or they can not just be a bath tube shaped or invert or whatever. So you should start thinking about what do you know in terms of these relationships, and then you can build that. You definitely can build that in.
Can I have a follow-up question? Which of the parameters do you think has the most influence on increasing screening coverage in that model?
Well, what was really key to come up with, it was key to have this insurance type thing in to reconcile the different data sources. It's not that there was one parameter. I mean, testing coverage is just the result of the model. It's not that we explain testing coverage, so what has the largest impact. We don't have that as a question in our model. But just the fact, what do we need to bring in to reconcile the data? This insurance type thing and also the underlying chlamydia status thing were really important. And when you go into the literature where other data sources and other people talk about this effect, it's like a threefold increase according to your underlying chlamydia status. So chlamydia positive women seem to be three times more likely to get tested than chlamydia negative women. For whichever reason, you know, they may be more easily offered a test or maybe accepted more easily, but they seem to be quite important in our model.